Good morning, everyone. Everyone awake and ready?
Yes.
Awake and ready?
Awake and ready.
Good. Will you please pray with me? Oh, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Amen. Reading from the book, The Yoga of Jesus, which is a collection of talks that Yogananda, Paramahansa Yogananda, gave about Jesus. This is entitled, Jesus the Avatar, God's Manifestation in Divine Incarnations. For mere mortals to cope with life of unsolved and unsolvable mysteries is an inscrutable universe would indeed be overwhelming challenge were it not for the divine emissaries who come to earth to speak with the voice and authority of God for the guidance of man. Eons past in ancient higher ages in India, rishis initiated the manifestation of divine beneficence, of God with us, in terms of divine incarnations or avatars, God incarnate on earth in enlightened beings. Many are the voices that have intermediated between God and man, khanda avatars, or partial incarnations, in God-knowing souls. Less common are the Purna avatars, liberated beings who are fully one with God. Their return to the earth is to fulfill a God-ordained mission. The Lord in the sacred Hindu Bible, the Bhagavad Gita, declares, whenever virtue declines and vice predominates, I incarnate as an avatar. In visible form, I appear from age to age to protect the virtuous and to destroy evil doing in order to reestablish righteousness. The same one glorious infinite consciousness of God, the universal Christ consciousness or the Kutastha Chaitanya, becomes familiarly appareled in the individuality of an enlightened soul graced with a distinguishing personality and godly nature appropriate to the times and purpose of the incarnation. Without this intercession of God's love come to earth in the example, message, and guiding hand of his avatars, it would scarce be possible for groping humanity to find the path into God's kingdom midst the dark miasma of world delusion, the cosmic substance of human habitation. Lest his benighted children be lost forever in creation's delusive labyrinths. The Lord comes again and again in God-illumined prophets to light the way. Jesus was preceded by Gautama Buddha, the enlightened one, whose incarnation reminded a forgetful generation of the Dharma Chakra, the ever-rotating wheel of karma. Self-initiated action and its effects, which make man and not a cosmic dictator responsible for his own present condition. Buddha brought heart back into the arid theology and mechanical rituals into which the ancient Vedic religion of India had fallen after passing of a higher age in which Bhagavan Krishna, India's most beloved of avatars, preached the way of divine love and God realization through the practice of the supreme spiritual science of yoga, union with God. And so we come to know from India's teachings and her great ones that these avatars, these incarnations of divinity, come to the earth from time to time. It's interesting, in the first few hundred years of Christianity, there's a great debate going on. And that is whether Jesus was a man who became a God, or God who became man. And eventually it was determined through the theological debates that happened that were not always enlightened debates, but it came down that Jesus was a divine incarnation. Now perhaps because these souls were not exposed to the teachings of other cultures, and it had not been indigenous to the teachings of Judaism at the time, that divine incarnations do come from time to time. Therefore, they took it that Jesus was a unique expression of God's love, God's grace, come to the earth as a divine incarnation. But this goes against everything that history tells us. Because we see these beautiful God-men and God-women who come to the earth, who are there to lift up mankind, to teach the most efficacious way to reaching realization of God, to show that it is even possible. If it were not for these divine incarnations, how would we even know of the goal? How do we know that there's anything other than what our five senses tell us? It's a fascinating story that are told in the scriptures the world over, because each and every one of these great scriptures are a blueprint of what mankind goes through in its evolution from the human to the divine. If we look into the first chapters of the Old Testament, it talks about and describes the devolution, or the entry of the soul from higher consciousness into lower consciousness. Symbolically, Adam and Eve started it all. Now, Adam represents reason, Eve represents feeling. And when feeling nature within, whether it's a man or a woman, is tempted by this fruit that is in the midst of the garden, which is bodily consciousness, expressed most powerfully through sexual consciousness. And when the soul is tempted to go deep into that fruit and to bite into it, to gain knowledge of good and evil, or to enter into duality, then it loses its original purity. It loses its original knowledge that God is walking in the garden at all times and can be communed with. And then we see the gradual devolution as Adam and Eve remove themselves out of the garden and they begin to wander into the world, and then they have their own children who begin to fight with each other, and one kills the other out of jealousy. And so on it goes, because it's all sown from this separation, this one idea of separation from God. And so we see so many different stories that are woven in through the Old Testament scriptures, in which there's some higher soul that comes in and he strives for something better. Perhaps at times he falls short of the goal, and that's part of the story as well. And then gradually, the preparation for the Christ comes. Now, first it comes from a prediction. It comes from some distant place that says there's going to be a divine incarnation one day. Now, this is true in the world as it is within the individual, because at some point through our readings, through our study, if we have an interest born in this nature, we begin to know that there's something more that we can attain to in this lifetime. Sometimes it comes through painful experience. Sometimes there's a disillusionment with this world and the things that it can offer. It can be preceded by some dramatic event. It can be an illness. It can be a death. It can be something that shakes our clinging to this earth. And it makes us know that we are temporary residents here. This happened for Siddhartha Gautama when he was going through his garden and he had not been exposed to any of the difficulties in life. But as Providence would arrange for it, as he was going along, suddenly he saw a man who was decrepit and old and bent over and wrinkly skin, and he'd never seen anybody like that before. And so he asked his charioteer, "What is this?" And the charioteer explained to him that it was old age and that it happened to everybody, including kings. And then they went on a little bit further and they saw somebody who was desperately ill next to the side of the road. He'd never seen that either. Now, symbolically, we can go through life and we're exposed to old age, we're exposed to illness, we're exposed to death, which is the third apparition that he saw. And yet, it's as if we never really see it, we never really encounter it, because it doesn't really shake us from the clinging to this body, as if it's the be-all, end-all of everything that is. And so as the Buddha goes on, then he also sees death, and it disturbs him. Now, when we're disturbed in this way, we really see this life will not last forever. And what am I about? Am I just about earning money? Am I just about relationships in my life? Because one day I'll leave all of that behind. There's the wonderful story of the man who is a miser. And one day he decided that he was really going to take it with him. They say you can't take it with you, but he is determined to take it with him. So with tremendous will, when he left the body, he exerted that will and he brought this bar of gold with him out of the body and lifted it up. And as he rose up into heaven, he everything that he could do to bring it with him. And he's so proud of himself. And he got to the gates of St. Peter. And St. Peter took one look at the brick, the gold there. And of course, they say that the roads are paved with gold in heaven. So St. Peter said, "Well, thank you very much for bringing another paving brick." And he picked it up and he tossed it over a big pile of other paving bricks of gold there. It was worth no more than that. And welcome in now. That's how much it's worth. That's how much it's worth. So if we leave everything behind, what do we take with us then? But ourselves. What we have cultivated for ourselves. And if that's just strictly around things of the world, material things, and we leave all that behind, we'll be completely at a loss as to what to do with ourselves, what to think of ourselves. So great incarnations come to help awaken us to this fact. Jesus was one of the great ones. He really was. And these scriptures that we get are so powerful and so tremendous because they are a blueprint of what we go through. And so there's this prediction that this Messiah is going to be born, an extraordinary soul. Now, exactly what he's going to do is pretty much open to speculation. People don't really know. That many people think he'll be a great warrior, perhaps come in as King David did. And he'll help free them, the state of Israel, from the Roman occupation at the time. And others will see him as a great religious leader and somebody who will bring great truth from God. And so people have a lot of different ideas about what a Messiah is supposed to do and what he's supposed to be. There's some predictions around it, but they're not always clear. And so this expectation, this kind of sense that something marvelous could happen, and finally, comes the day when this incarnation is really going to come into this world. And so we start the story with this young girl who's just engaged to be married. Her name is Mary, but she's not married yet. And this angel comes to her, the angel Gabriel, and he said, "You're going to be with child." And she said, "How's that possible? I've not known a man." And he said, "In God, all things are possible." And she accepts it. Now, this could, in those days, this could mean her death. She could be stoned for becoming pregnant without being married. She could be put away by her fiancé, Joseph. A lot of terrible things and not many good things could happen as a result of this annunciation. And yet, she accepts it. She says, I am the handmaid of the Lord. That is, she is in service to God. She comes with that purity of thought, purity of mind. Even though it can mean terrible things for her in a human sense, still she accepts it completely and totally. Now, when you take this to the inner meaning, this is that part of us who has faith in God and wants to serve God. Now, it doesn't mean that there aren't other competing parts of us. All of these different personalities in the Bible, they all represent different aspects of ourselves. The Christ is inside of us. All of the apostles are inside of us. King Herod is inside of us. They're all representative of different aspects of ourselves. And so Mary gets this revelation from God. Now, angels are those direct perceptions that come from God. They're an idea that are not arrived at through your own logic. They come as a revelation to you from some intelligence and consciousness higher than your own. And so she so humbly accepts this, whatever the consequences are. She's willing to endure them. When we have that kind of feeling, when we have that kind of attitude, that kind of willingness, then that is preparatory for the Christ consciousness to be born inside of us. Now, as Mother talked about, this also has a different level of meaning within the body. Within the body, we have many different parts of our body, many different glands, many different organs. And these two are represented by different personalities and different aspects being told in the story. This is an amazing blueprint for each and every one of us. The Ida and the Pingala in the yogic tradition travel up the spine. And they connect to the pineal and the pituitary glands. And these are the Joseph and the Mary glands, these two glands. And when you are in this preparatory period for this Christ consciousness, these two glands have secretions. And the secretions come out of these two glands, and they come together, and they form a perfect Christ seed. Now, this happens in the energetic body as well as in the material body. And so these two glands come together, form this perfect seed. Now, the two glands never come physically together. And so it can be said to be a virginal birth. There's no interaction in that way, but these two fluids come together. And one is milk-like in substance, and the other is honey-like in substance. They have two different substances. So this is the beginning of the land of the milk and honey. And from that, this Christ seed then travels down the ganglionic nervous system, and it is deposited in a cave-like area just behind the stomach. Now, Bethlehem means house of bread. And that is your stomach region, and that is where the Christ seed is taken to. And there you see the star. Now, the star happens here at the ajna, the point between the eyebrows. And when you're sitting in meditation and you're being quiet, you look there and you see that star. Not long ago, I had a tremendous experience. And as we are closing out our six-hour meditation, I had asked God if there is anything else that he wanted to show me or give to me at this time. And immediately, I heard this tremendous sound. It was a tremendous roar, and it's the Om vibration that was so powerful and so overwhelming. And it was wonderful. It really is. And then suddenly my inner vision opened up, and I saw myself in this cathedral, but it wasn't an ordinary cathedral. It was all made of luminescent light. And it had these tremendous pillars on both sides that were also made up of light. It was beautiful beyond anything in the physical world. And as I was seeing all of this unfold before my inner vision, then I was drawn at a very high speed, but no sense of motion. And I came to the front of this cathedral, and where ordinarily there would have been a wall behind where the altar was, there is an enormous cave of light that was there. And I entered into that cave of light, and as I proceeded forward, I left behind the cathedral, and there within my vision was this five-pointed star. Now, the first time that I'd seen this five-pointed star was sometime not long after I met Mother. And when I saw it, I was meditating and thinking about God, and suddenly the star just appeared. I wasn't looking for it or anything. And it just appeared, and it stayed there for about 5 minutes. I didn't time it, but it was about that long. It felt like a long time at the time. And it was beautiful, and I was so inspired by it. But I just saw it, and that was all, and I was a little disappointed afterwards because I didn't have any particular experience with it other than seeing it. But in this case, as I traveled through this tunnel and I came to this five-pointed star, then I merged into that star, and it became a light that went out all over this world and out to all creation in a vast expanse. Now, this is the Christ consciousness within you. It happens at what is in yoga called the Kutasya Chaitanya. It happens here at this third eye point. And this is the doorway to God. When Jesus said, I am the doorway, he's speaking of this doorway. And this is how we enter into our own inner kingdom. You know, he said himself that the kingdom of heaven is within you, and it is at hand. It's near. Now, I don't think he could have said that 2,000 years ago with a straight face and said that it's near and have 2,000 years go by and not have it appear. This second coming of Christ happens right within you. This Christ will not come out of the clouds that are up in the blue skies that we see and come down to earth and start taking care of things and straighten out this earth. That's not how it happens. When the individual is ready, when you are prepared, then these are the experiences that happen within you. And you will see this five-pointed star. And when you have purified the consciousness, you will enter into that light. And that light will become expansive. And it is at that point that you have entered into Christ consciousness. These are real experiences that can happen to you. They're not just for one individual who lived 2,000 years ago. In the first of John, it says, to all them who received him, received him. Receiving isn't just believing or thinking about. It's opening body, mind, and soul to these experiences. To all them who received him, gave he power to become sons of God. Jesus was not the only son of God. Each one of us have that capacity. It's our evolutionary destiny to become one with God, even as Jesus did. And so this is something that we can enter into. Now, not everybody does. You have to prepare yourself. You have to be ready for these experiences when they happen. But when they do happen, they become very real to you. When I first entered into this path, I'm not sure that I really had a conception of what these experiences would be like. But as they began to unfold, I was surprised at how powerful they were and how visceral they are, how real they felt to my entire being. They weren't something that was ephemeral. They weren't something that was like wispy-like. It was something that really came into your whole being. And when this truth reveals itself to you, it's not just an idea, it's not just a thought. Every cell of your being resonates with this truth. It's an entire experience that you are taken through. So you don't have to worry about, well, am I just being taken on a fool's errand? I was very determined that that was not what I was interested in. I wanted to know the truth, and I wanted to know bliss. Those were my two criteria. And it needed to stand up, at least to me. It's not something I can necessarily prove to anyone else, but I can prove it to myself. And this is what makes it a science, is that in physical science, you make it so it's a replication. You can do a replication of the experiment, and you can do that in spiritual science too. It's just simply you can't produce data that will necessarily convince anyone else, but you can absolutely and totally convince yourself. And there doesn't need to be one single doubt. You keep going until you removed all doubt. If there's any doubt, then you haven't completed the journey yet. But as you enter into this five-pointed star, you go through this tremendous expansiveness of consciousness and of light and of joy and of peace and of bliss. It's an entire package. And it all comes to you. And then you realize your freedom. Your freedom from ignorance. Your freedom from being such a small container in this human body and this human consciousness, trying to contain everything that you are in God. You may have been born with a dream in your mind, a dream of something great happening, something wonderful, knowing that you are something more than just what you are in a human sense, that you have this divine nature that's part and parcel of who you are. And unless you really go to work on yourself and are willing to do what it takes to grow, then you won't experience it. And that's what Mary is. She's willing to do whatever it takes, whatever it costs her. She represents that. She has that purity of intent. And she has that courage and that willingness to move forward with things. Now, she's not the Christ consciousness itself, but she is the predecessor to it that's absolutely necessary. And so that is what she represents. Now, Joseph comes along as reason. That's the feeling nature, that you have that whole sense of willingness. And then reason nature comes in afterwards. Well, he's presented in a human sense. He's presented with Mary, who says she is now with child. He knows he's not been with her. So you can imagine what goes through his head. How else could this happen? And he can put her away privately and not have anything terrible happen other than the marriage wouldn't take place and she would live the rest of her life in shame. Or he could make a public spectacle of her and they could do a stoning and they could kill her. He's not of mind to do either one of those, but he doesn't know what to do. But he, as reason, he has that openness. He wants to know what the right thing is to do. And so it's through a dream that he has this revelation that this is something that has come from something on higher, not because she's responded to base emotions and impulses, but because this is a gift from God. And so he too, because of that information that comes to him, he's willing to submit to God's will. Now these reason and feeling have come together, and they are on the same page now. Now how does this happen in our everyday life? Our everyday life offers us challenges. We may be listening for, through deepened meditation, the will of God, but something may come to us and we resist it. We don't want to do it because we're afraid. We're afraid of what other people will think. We're afraid of what the consequences might mean for us. Do I really want to do this? It's a very interesting thing that the ego does. The ego mind is that part in you that identifies with your body, body consciousness, your part in the world. And it wants to maintain itself. It wants to preserve itself. And going to God very definitely threatens its complete stranglehold on all the decisions that you make. And so when you think of surrendering to God, that ego nature really kicks his heels up. And he doesn't want to go there. And so the ego nature will project onto God consciousness what the ego does to you. So the ego puts you into a small little box, a small little prison of thought and of behavior and of realization. And it says if you go to God, you'll become nothing. You'll become less. You won't become more. You won't be happy. You'll be unhappy. Sometimes people hear the descriptions that Mother had of what she went through in order to gain this Christ consciousness. And because she came as a special incarnation, she had a special dispensation and also great difficulties to go through. She assured us that we would never have to go through all the things that she went through. But many of the things she had gone through, she didn't hear from the teachings of others, so she wanted to make sure that we had the information. Now, these things don't come to you, difficulties in the spiritual path, because God is making it difficult for you, because He's causing pain for you. You're facing yourself and the very things that you have done in your outward journey from God. And so it's not something that's being done to you. You're just simply having to face yourself. If you took a journey one day and you started out in a village and you went out for a nice long walk, and most of it was downhill and it was pleasurable and you were doing all right, and then suddenly you decided that you wanted to return to the village, and the only way was to return by the very path that you had come. Well, if it was downhill all the way, and then it's going to be uphill in the going back. You're going to have to face every footstep that you took in going out from that village. And so when you go out from God, so to speak, you take this journey into the world, into human ego consciousness, and then you want to return back to divine consciousness, you have to face those things that you did. That's the law of cause and effect. As you sow, so shall you reap. And it starts coming back to you, and when you start coming back to you, sometimes you don't like it. And you blame God on it, of all things. Now, God is the resource that you have. It's the strength, it's the guidance, it's the purity, it's the light that is within you. And when you open up to that higher nature, you open up to the greatest resource you have for growing spiritually. So far from seeing God as the problem and creating problems for you, you see God as the resource. He's the strength. He's the everything that you need in order to return back to God consciousness. So this is something that is vastly important, is to get straight in your own mind that going to God is not painful because God makes it painful for you. You're just simply facing the very same things that you have done. And this is the law. This is just what you have to go through. But you don't have to go through it alone. You don't have to go through it alone. That's the ego nature. You have this seed that is born inside of you, this Christ consciousness, this divine intelligence, this divine power. And it is really the activating force inside of you. Jesus described it as the yeast that is inside of the bread before the bread rises. And when you make the environment conducive towards entering into that Christ consciousness, it's like warming the oven with the yeast in it, and then suddenly the yeast begins to rise. Now that activating power is that Christ consciousness that is inside of you. And it begins to do whatever is necessary in order for you to come into that state of realization. And so that begins to, this entire process, this seed comes down to that cave-like area behind the stomach. And then Herod, the passions, come up. And it wants to cut all the heads off of all the children. And that is done through an expulsion of sexual energy. When you're in this particular stage, you hold that sexual energy. You don't expel it. And as a result of that, gradually the Herod or the passions die back down. And then that Christ seed goes on a journey. It goes into Egypt. Now, symbolically, in the Bible, that represents the place of darkness. That goes down into the first chakra. Nothing against Egypt. It's just being used as a symbol. And so it goes down into this base chakra. And it's from there that it resides for some time until the passions are gone. And then that seed starts to make its way back to Galilee, which is the circuit, and it's a circuit of the spine. And as we know that there are the different stages of consciousness, these chakras that are all the way up through the spine. And these are the different disciples that the Christ seed is taking up with it as it goes up through the spine. You see what a tremendous story this is. And it's your story. It's my story. It's the story of every human being as they go from this journey, from the human to the divine. And it's wonderful and it's beautiful. And it represents the highest thing that you can do with this lifetime. Now, not everybody is called to this life. People are working out their own karmic patterns. And some people come, everyone is called to doing something higher. But they're not necessarily ready for what Mother called the last mile, going this way of the Christ seed. But all of us here are called to that. We feel something stirred inside of us. We want something more out of our lives. I remember one vision that I was given by God, in which I was shown the end of a lifetime that I had had. And it was not that I did anything particularly bad in the lifetime, but when I left the body, I rose up. And when you rise up out of the body, you're put in touch. If you haven't cultivated higher sensitivities during your lifetime, you're put in touch with the higher sensitivities of your own soul at that time, and you review your life. It all goes before you. And you know from that higher consciousness what was right and what was wrong. And you feel sorry for the things that you did wrong. And you feel pleased with the things that went right. Well, in that lifetime, I had really come in the lifetime, because every soul has a plan for itself when it comes into a lifetime. And I had really planned, I really wanted to make spiritual progress. But when I entered into the world, I got caught up into the downward sweep and stream of the world. It wasn't anything bad, as I said, it's just the busyness of world. It's just being about things that were part of the five senses, and I didn't really go to work on myself. I didn't really make that aspiration for higher consciousness. And I remember being lifted up out of that lifetime, and I had such deep regret for having not made a greater effort to get that stage of realization, because now time was up. Lights were out for that lifetime. I couldn't go back and redo it. Now, what I would do to save anybody from having that level of regret that I had, but that set the stage for coming lifetimes, because I really made a determination in myself, I did not want another lifetime to slip by without having really made the effort and doing everything that I could in order to attain that higher state of realization. Now, as long as you have desire nature for this world more than you have desire nature for God, you'll constantly be brought back to this world. This is not punishment. This is simply fulfilling the desire nature within you. If you take a worm out of the mud and you put it up on the sidewalk and you carefully wash it off, that worm will just wiggle and wiggle and wiggle until it's worked its way back into the mud again, because that's where it's comfortable. So if you take a soul who's all accustomed to worldly consciousness and you bring it up into heavenly consciousness, it's not going to like it that much. It's not attuned to it. It has material and physical desires that it wants to work out. And so unless you've attuned yourself to that through this lifetime, then you're going to want to naturally be drawn back to this world, because that's where those desires can be fulfilled. But you keep going through lifetime after lifetime, and eventually you get to the point where it becomes rather tiresome. You do the same pattern again and again and again, and you don't get anything lasting from it. You get temporary happiness, which then encourages you to move on and to continue to do that. But eventually you get tired of it. And when you get good and tired of it, then you're ready to move on towards higher consciousness. And that's what many of the stories about the Old Testament are all about. It's this moving through all of these different lifetimes, up and down, back and forth, until you come to that point where you know and you're very clear on what you want out of a lifetime. This is the thing that the great masters offer to us, that Mother and Papa and Master all offer. It's that directness to go to God alone, not to look to the left or look to the right, but go straight to the goal itself. There's a famous saint in India, Shirdi Sai Baba. And he was famous for granting people's wishes. If they came and they wanted some healing, if they wanted material prosperity, whatever it was, then he would give that to them. And so, of course, he became quite famous all over India, and really even today. When you go to India, you probably see his picture more than anybody else on all the dashboards and all the various places where they put the images of these different great masters. And he was one of the great ones. And he said something very interesting one time. He says, I give people what they want until they want what I want to give them. Can you follow that? I give people what they want until they want what I want to give them. You can say that that's true for God too. If we want to wander and play in this life and just keep going and repeating the same patterns, God is very happy to have us do so. He's given us free will. But when we tire of this world and we want to return into that divine consciousness, then God is really happy because this is joyful for him. He gets joy from all life because, you know, it's a very interesting thing in India that this whole creation is said to be a product of Ananda, a bliss. It's a blissful expression. All creation is. Now, why do we miss that? It seems like we get very far from that. It seems like a veil of tears, which also the Veda says that it is. So why do we miss out on that bliss? Because God is the source of that bliss, that supreme consciousness. It'll never be found through the five senses and through the body and through our role in this world. That'll always have a dual nature to it. For every high, there will be a low. For every pleasure, there will be a pain. It's just the nature. It's the way this world works. It's only when we get connected with the divine consciousness within ourselves that we are really able to enjoy that bliss continuously. It's not dependent on what the body is doing. It's not dependent on what anything else is going on in our life. Even if this body is in pain, we can still experience bliss. I've told you the story before about when I was at an Anandashram and I was in such tremendous pain because I was had some infection that I was dealing with. I had a high fever. I was confined to my bed and it was very painful. And I was telling Papa in my mind, you say that pain and bliss are the same, but it doesn't feel like that to me. You have to show me how this is true. See, I want it provable. I just don't want to hear something and then repeat it because somebody else said it. I want to know the truth of it. How can that be true? And suddenly I was lifted up and I saw within my internal vision Papa there, and he had this big toothless grin, and we took each other's hands and we started dancing around and around, and I just felt bliss. Now, I was aware in the back of my mind that this body was still in pain, still had a high fever, but it took a back seat. It was very much down away from me. And what was predominant was this feeling of bliss that I was feeling. So whatever it is that you're experiencing in this world, it doesn't mean that you can't feel your connection with God. That includes all of our emotions as well. We can feel sadness, we can feel grief, we can feel happiness. We can feel joy in a material sense. And we can feel God weaving that consciousness, that experience, all the way through whatever else we are going through. You see, so oftentimes when we go through what we think of are negative experiences in this world, that we're separated from God. We maybe have a pity party of one, and we sit down and we feel good and sorry for ourselves, because we're in a painful condition and everybody else is, of course, is swimmingly happy. That's how we see it when we're in a miserable condition. Everybody else is perfectly happy and we're the only ones who are having difficulty. And you enter into that feeling of separation. Now, this is absolutely the wrong thing to do, because we're cutting ourselves off from the very source of spiritual power, light, consciousness that will best help us when we're going through a difficult time. And so we train ourselves. This is part of our spiritual sadhana, that no matter what we're going through, we continually to open ourselves to that divine awareness and that divine consciousness. Because it's through that guidance, it's through that light, that we will find what we're looking for. Plato had the wonderful cave analogy, and in the cave analogy, there is these people who are sitting in this cave with a fire behind them, some source of light. And they saw the dancing shadows on the walls, and they became entranced with these dancing shadows. And people thought, well, that's just what creation is. That's what the world is. That's what everything is, or these dancing shadows. And one day, somebody broke their trance. They got up. They left the cave. They saw there was a bright, beautiful world out there. And so they went back into the cave and they tried to wake up other people. Say, you don't have to be in the dark here. You don't have to be just entranced with these dancing shadows. There's a remarkable world outside of the cave. But nobody was interested. Everybody was just too entranced with those dancing shadows. And so he used that as a means of talking about the difficulty of somebody coming in, presenting spiritual truths, and how dedicated we are to being entranced with these shadows. But you don't understand my life. You don't understand my pain. You don't understand how difficult this is for me. And the truth is, the spiritual teacher does understand how difficult it is, but it also knows something more. It knows what this bright, beautiful world is outside of the cave. And when you get connected to divine consciousness, it is like stepping out into that bright, beautiful world. And then the world just seems like these dancing shadows. And it's all right for what it is. But it's not the be-all, end-all. No way. No way. You have so much potential. You have so much in your nature. And to be satisfied with 1%, 2% of your potentiality. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't improve your lot in this life. That you don't go about earning a living, enjoying this life for what it has to offer. It's one of the four things that are held in balance in yoga, which is kama, which is sensory pleasures. You live in a body, you're going to have some things that you enjoy. And as long as you do it in balance, it's all right. But as soon as you make it the dictator, you're in trouble. And so we come to this place of the birth of the Christ, this Mary consciousness inside of us, that this wonderful news comes to us, but there may be consequences to it. It may shake our world up. It may disturb us. And we don't know what it's going to do. We don't know what it's going to look like. Larhimahasya worked on and developed and entered into this highest divine consciousness while he worked, while he had family, while he had home. It was all held in balance, and he is able to do it all. So he proved to us, Mother Hamilton came into this world and she worked for so many years. And she entered into high states of divine consciousness even while she was still very active in this world. And even after gaining complete realization, she stayed very active in this world. And so the world itself is not the problem. It's our clinging to it and what it should be. I think you'll find that all of our suffering really comes from our attachment to how we think life should be. And when it doesn't measure up to that, we feel disappointed, we feel angry, we feel hurt. When we let go of that and we accept that whatever has happened happens for our own highest good, then we free ourselves from the suffering that we had to endure before. We've been thinking so much of Christine over these last days in particular, but before that as well, and missing her presence and missing her being here. And since she's left the body. But I'll tell you, I had a wonderful experience not too long ago. And in that experience, I was sitting in meditation and I was lifted up. And I was in this very room, even though I wasn't physically here. It looked very much like this room, only it was the higher version of this room because there is no visible ceiling to it. It was just filled with light. And seeing Christine and seeing Mother were both here in this room along with some other people. And she was natural and she was happy. And she was very much about doing the things that she was called to do in this new life that she has now. Now we can miss her and we can feel sorrow that she's not here in that way, but we don't have to feel sorry for her. And that's a big difference. Because she's moved on with her life. And she has that happiness. She has that big smile. She has Mother there with her. And she's so happy about that. So you see, all the feelings can be there. All the emotions can be there. And it's when we think it shouldn't be like this. It's not supposed to be like this. And then we hang on to some past vision of what it's supposed to look like. That creates real suffering for us and it stops us from growing. But when we have emotions that come through us, sometimes it can hit you like a tsunami wave. A huge rush of feeling. And when you can let it pass through, it's natural to have that feeling. And it passes through and you watch it disappear over the horizon. You don't hold on to it. You don't do anything with it. You just simply watch it pass through you. And really all feeling, all emotion, you can be standing on the banks of the river and simply watching the river pass by, moving through. And it's perfectly natural and it's perfectly fine. And you breathe and you watch it pass by. And in this way, you don't hang on to everything. You don't sink into a mood. A mood is when you hold on to a certain feeling or a certain idea. And you don't let it move through. You don't let it pass through. Because you're sad or angry or because you don't want that thing to happen. And then you get stuck. And when you get stuck, then you can stay in that for a very, very long time until you allow yourself to become unstuck. So we breathe, we open, we allow. And then from behind you, you feel that lovely current, that spiritual current coming in. Jesus said a very interesting thing. He said, "Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted." Now, not everybody who mourns feels comfort, do they? But when you open yourself up to that divine presence, you get a comfort in there. You get a feeling of peace. You get a certain inner assurance. And it allows you to glow with an inner illumination that otherwise would be absent. So it helps to tell us, it helps to show us that everything operates in God. And if we would allow it, that it all moves through us. It's a passing thing that moves through us. And then we open ourselves and allow ourselves to receive that comfort, to receive that light, to receive that intelligence. And then that healing happens in a very kind of natural way. So you see, there's no part of ourselves, there's no part of our life that we need to hold aside and say, this is only about me. We open it all. We open it all. And in that openness, we are able to receive. And when, like Mary, we're able to receive whatever it is that God has to give to us. And we take it with that total faith, that total understanding, that total willingness to move forward. Then that is what allows for a higher consciousness to really grow inside of us. So let us remind ourselves, particularly in this time of year, when we're celebrating so many things about the birth of Christ, that we remember that faith and that understanding that both Mary and Joseph brought that allowed for that Christ consciousness to come in and to help change this world, helps change the world inside of you, and it helps change the world outside of you. And through that change, you are uplifted. And then you feel the bliss and the light of that Christ consciousness. You realize the avatar within your own being. Bruce, if you'd like to hand out any. We're going to sing the Silent Night, the three different verses, if you know it, but we have the words, and Bruce will just indicate to Bruce, like, it's on the last page of the booklet he's giving you. Saves us from having to hum the last couple of verses. So, of course, as we sing the words, to really feel them in your heart, open yourself. There's such beautiful, beautiful words and beautiful music. Silent night.
sight. Glory stream from heaven above. Heavenly hosts sing alleluia. Christ the Savior is born. Christ the Savior is born. Silent night, holy night, Son of God, love's pure light, radiant beams from thy holy face, with the dawn of redeeming grace. Jesus, Lord, at thy birth, Jesus, Lord, at thy birth.
And he truly was, Lord, at thy birth, born an avatar, a perfected being, come to this world for its upliftment, beneficence, and goodness. Will you please pray after me? O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet and surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am he. As we chant those Oms, just feel them going out all over this world, spreading out all across the surface of this world. That hearts and minds everywhere should be touched with the peace, the inner attunement, and the light of Christ consciousness. To see this world transformed. And to feel it uplifted.